as a brand, you need to start to not just think about products, but how you can build the world that you can build on. You need that platform after to allow other people to interact or build or remix so that you can really benefit from that effect of co-creation that's going to happen. Otherwise, you're going to miss out.
I'm thrilled to welcome Benoit Pagotto to this episode of Now Then 10. Benoit is already an NFT legend, being a co-founder of the hugely successful Artifact Studios. And through collaborations with the likes of Japanese pop icon Takashi Murakami and blockchain artist Ferocious, Artifact quickly started creating some of the most sought-after NFT content around. But the world really sat up and took notice in March 2021, when Artifact sneaker collab with Ferocious pulled in millions of dollars within just 5 minutes of being released. Almost overnight, everybody wanted a piece of the Artifact pie, including the world's largest athletic company, Nike, who bought Artifact in December 2021, just 2 years after Artifact launched. Artifact now sits alongside Nike's iconic brand subsidiaries, such as Air Force One, Air Jordan, and Converse. So Benoit, welcome to Now Then 10. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, and a really good intro, actually. It's always great to have someone recap what we've done in a short time. It's cool to hear that like this, but no, thank you.
Well, no, thank you. We like to start each episode with a quick fire round. Are you ready?
Yes.
Let's do it then. Okay, trainers, high tops or low tops?
Low tops.
Are you a night owl or an early riser?
I'm a night bat.
Which did you have, a Sega Mega Drive or a Super Nintendo?
I had both, but first the Mega Drive.
Are you more likely to stick with a plan or go with the flow?
Go with the flow.
Online multiplayer or local multiplayer?
Online these days.
Looking to the future or living in the moment?
Looking to the future.
Shopping online or shopping in a store?
Both.
But if you have to choose one?
I like to shop in stores because I used to work in stores, you know, so it's always interesting. I like to see a retail experience, all of that. So shopping in store is still cool.
Finish this sentence. The future is
now.
I want to start with the now and what's driving you in the moment. And you've been dropping teasers for something called Project Animus for a while now. Can you tell us about it and what sets it apart?
Project Animus is our actually next collaboration. We're working with Takashi Murakami, just like with Clonex. And it's a new type of product we're releasing, which is our take on virtual collectible pets. And we've been working on it now for over a year and a half with a AAA type of video game team that is some of the best artists from the games we all love and grew up with. And the goal of this project is, again, yet again, to invent a new category for Artifact. Just like some fashion brands are selling some designer handbags, we're going to sell some designer virtual pets.
I literally can't wait. I'm so excited for it. And I also want to talk about Nike's purchase of Artifact and what opportunities it's opened up for you as an innovator.
Joining Nike has been really amazing. Again, like one of the most innovative companies in the world. And being part of the Nike portfolio of brands is great because there's a lot of knowledge sharing that's happening, you know, together. Again, I think it's a huge opportunity for us, but also a huge opportunity for them to be able to learn from the weirdos we are and how we see the world and the business. I always said that our goal when joining them was if we manage to make things change even just by 1%, it's already a huge win for us, but also for the world. So I think there's a big change of innovation and how we see the market in the future and how we think of products without any boundaries between physical and digital. So it's been amazing, you know, I think partnership and I couldn't think of a better place for us to be in.
You've spoken about shifting your focus away from creating products and towards creating whole worlds. Can you expand on that and tell us how you plan to do it?
So, I mean, it's not really the focus, but just I think that any brand today, they should really start to think about how they can go beyond just creating, you know, always the same circle of having a product category, targets around these products and, you know, just selling atoms in a sense, like, and most traditional brands, they kind of work a lot on the experience. You know, we talk about experience marketing and all of that since a long time, especially with retail or, you know, also the service side, and how all of this is making a whole so that you give a really exciting and on-brand experience. But now that, you know, people spend more and more time online, you need to start to think, okay, like, what is an online world, you know, can I look for my brand? Like, how do I make a place or places? And it can be ephemeral places. It can be a pop-up online event that goes up and down. But I think really it's important to start to think of how do you create spaces for people to be able to interact with or build on, and not simply just experience passively, right? So you can do that with physical events, but online has been very, very limited for brands because of the lack of knowledge they have of simply just video games. You know, me, I spent a lot of my life in video games more than in the real world. Just even recently, I spent a lot of time playing the latest Zelda, which is amazing, by the way. But you need to start to think of that. I think of how do you not simply create products, but you create interactive experiences. So which can be through a product or through a small world for that product release or a permanent space for a community to hang and build in. But it's very important that I think you need to take into consideration that the next generation, they all grew up playing Minecraft. Now, you know, they also play Zelda that implemented as well a lot of building mechanics very similar to Minecraft. That is, you know, giving a canvas for the audience to be creative and do the challenges of the game the way they want, not the way the developer intended it necessarily. And I think as a brand, you need to start to not just think about products, but how you can build a world that you can build on. You build the foundation and you finance and you start to build the platform, but you need that platform after to allow other people to interact or build or remix so that you can really benefit from that effect of co-creation that's going to happen. Otherwise, you're going to miss out. And I think if brands wants to really keep the relevancy, they need to go beyond just their usual day-to-day business that has been working great so far with the type of era of capitalism we're in. But I think we're really going to enter a new moment where you need to be able to welcome people into your world and do their things into your world, or you're going to miss out on a lot of amazing ideas, amazing concepts, and potentially as well amazing business revenues if you don't start to think a bit of a world platform for your brand.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, you know, this idea of going beyond collaborations and very successful collaborations have been a really big part of Artifact. And you've had some amazing names that you've already been talking about. What is it that you actually look for in potential collaborators?
So in collaboration, we're always looking for, honestly, it's quite simple. We always work with people that we are fans of, either fan now or used to be a fan when we were teenagers. And then suddenly we have access and we can talk to that person. So we always look to people for brands or people that excite us or used to excite us a lot and that we dream to work with. And we always try to make sure that we do something together that we cannot do on our own, right? Because that's the beauty of a collaboration, is to spawn something you cannot do on your own. So it's always super genuine, super creativity focused and idea focused first rather than the business. Because we believe that people see if something is genuine or not. And then if it's very genuine and genuinely exciting, then it will work. So that's the simple strategy we had so far in collaboration. There's no magic trick.
I love that. Now, I was also interested to read that you forbid the use of the word consumer. Can you tell me why that's important to you, to value your customers as people and not just consumers?
Well, this is just it's a simple mental thing, you know, but because to me, the word consumer is very, you know, it's about consuming and it's passive people that get fed what you want to send them or feed them. Whereas us, you know, we think more of them as collectors or fans. And when you have that approach and when you shift your brain to think of them as not consumers, you do your brand differently, right? You don't focus purely on just sending them things. And you always think of, okay, like they give me value by buying what I sell them, but what value do I give them back, right? So it can be status, can be other things. But so that's very important, I think, for us since day one, that we don't want to treat people as consumers. And I think in the future, it's going to be a key thing if you want your brand, again, like to stay culturally relevant.
So it's time to take a look back to the then. and see how your life experiences have helped to shape you. So, who were your biggest influences growing up?
So it's still today, honestly, the my biggest influence is an artist called Aphex Twin, who's a music artist from the UK. He's my favorite music artist ever. And I always loved about him that, you know, he's a genius. He does everything, you know, when he wants, however he wants. He didn't release music for 10 years at some point, and all the fans were just dying to get something. And then an anonymous SoundCloud broke out and started to release 150 unreleased tracks day by day, every 10 minutes. So that was always someone. I always loved that artist because first, I think he's a genius and it's my favorite music ever. But I also loved the attitude of being very mysterious and a bit of a, you know, I do what I want type of attitude. And then, you know, I always loved as well a lot of different contemporary artists from, again, UK. We are the UK, even though I'm French, but a lot of my favorite artists are from the UK. But I'm a big fan of, you know, the movement of a young British artist that, you know, Damien Hirst came out from, like the J.K. Tino Chapman. And I'm a huge fan of J.K. Tino Chapman because it's two brothers that did a lot of very, very provocative art and then shocked the art world a lot. And I've always been a fan of people who are challenging, you know, that are so good that they can allow themselves things that others would never dare to do. And also, of course, Murakami, always been a huge fan of Takeshi Murakami. And what I always respected a lot with him is that he really managed to mix different environments together. You know, he's from the contemporary art world, but he's also, you know, he made a music video for Billie Eilish, or he did collaboration with so many different brands and created amazing IPs. And I love the fact that he's managing to talk to this different audience and different type of people and ages and worldwide, while still being, you know, very, very precise on what he does with his art and what he does for other artists with Kaka Kiki. So that's the type of people I like, you know, people who are not afraid to go beyond the frontier they are given, and the people also are so confident that they can say no to things that normally everybody else would say yes.
So I want to pick up on this, the urge that you have to do things differently and go against the crowd, because I read that you studied at the prestigious École Nationale Supérieure de Beaux-Arts, and that in your final year project, you did raise some eyebrows and you got accused of spitting in the soup. What does that mean?
In the soup, yeah, it's a French expression, actually. No, because by then I was making, my projects were doing a fake artist. So I was very, very interested by the art world and also the art school world, where I think in France, even though it's amazing schools and studies, they don't teach you about the business side of art. And it's amazing studies because you're kind of left on your own and you need to find subjects that interest you and you want to dig in and turn into an artistic medium. But I was really analyzing a lot of how do you make people think something is artist, you replicate the codes of something and you make it look like it's from that world, even though it's not. So that's why I was making fake artists, and I was really taking the same, you know, codes than contemporary art with like black and white pictures, abstract text about life and da, 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 and how you display. And so I was very interested by that, and I made some fake artists, and I was told I was spitting a bit in the soup. Because again, I always like to provoke a little bit. And I'm very, very interested again of how do you take something from a specific world or industry or cultural niche or cultural circle, and how you can you integrate it if you understand the code and remix them or disrupt them? Or how can you put a light on something that is not, you know, accessible to everyone, but you manage to get in because you understand how that society works. So it's stuff that interests me a lot.
Now, you spoke earlier about the fact that you love gaming and you grew up as a gamer. And at the same time, while studying, you also got a job at the hip Parisian boutique Colette. So
yes.
You've got gaming, you've got, you know, fashion, you've got streetwear. How did all these things combine and kind of help influence you at this time?
What you do is a sum of all the stuff you've done before, right? And then it's up to you if you manage to connect the dots in between, even to things that are, you know, seem totally disconnected at first. And I think that's the thing I've always managed to do well. Like even in my group of friends, you know, I've got a lot of different group of friends that I managed to connect together. And that's how I did the Artifact team as well. I connected all this group of people that I was saving and being friends with or worked with over the years to in the end combine everyone into a small killer team. So to me, like the fact that I was always some type of a social geek, super into anime, super into video games, but also thanks to Colette, and that was my student job for years. I understood very, very early as well how you combine street culture, high fashion, art. Because Colette was this, you know, it was always made as a shop. It was the first concept store that was combining these things that used to be different verticals. You could only see in one place at a time, but you could go there and see everything at once. Plus, it was extremely well curated and shifting every week. So this taught me a lot about how you combine these different cultures, but if you put them around a strong concept, you can connect the dots around them. So that taught me very, very early how to connect these different weird cultures or things I was a geek of, and then how you put them together into something that makes sense and that is becoming then after a thing on its own. So that taught me definitely a lot.
But by 2015, you then turned your attention towards digital goods and esports. So what actually drew you towards esports?
So esports, actually, I was following, you know, since very early. And 2015, I arrived in London. It was the very, very beginning when esports started to become more than just for gamers and become a bit mainstream. I think it was the League of Legends World Cup in London at the time. And I attended and I met one of the team owners and he asked to hire me. But it was a moment I was waiting for a while because I was always convinced that gaming was going to start to influence a lot more than just the gaming world. And then esports was an interesting representation of how gaming culture is then shifting towards sports and entertainment. And you could see, again, a lot of the codes you see in sports entertainment, but then, you know, with the gaming side, it's different or you can make things differently. So that's how I decided I was to join that team because I was always a big believer that the future is really made for gamers. I think I was employee number 7 when I joined and I left, what, 120. So I was really there at the right moment when all the esports scene grew and blew up and started to get, you know, proper international recognition because it used to be already big in Korea and Southeast Asia for a long time, but didn't have that big event and big money and big attention that got generated in Europe, in the US from 2015 to 2020. So it was super, super exciting to do this. And it taught me a lot as well on the talent management because they are, you know, never did talent management before. And there was a big talent management part of managing the players and getting them to do things for sponsors or trying to make them their own venture, stuff like that. So it was a very, very, very cool to do.
Let's finish by talking about the future in the next 10 years of digital innovation and progression. What innovations and advancements in the metaverse and Web3 tech would you like to see in the next 10 years?
I mean, the thing is, I think we've seen it already. It's something, you know, when we started the company, we just did content and we did content that was trying to showcase what the future could be and excite people. So we did a lot around augmented reality, mixed reality, you know, all our early days content was around that. And, you know, we've been playing around with the Snap Spectacles, with the Oculus, like with a lot of VR headsets, but we're all really, really waiting for the moment that form factor becomes lighter and really allows for proper augmented reality and mixed reality. So that's the next big advancement I'm waiting on is mixed reality device. Apple showed their take on it recently and I thought it was really, really exciting. And as well, I think the next thing, but that's already happening is all the AI tools that used to be, you know, more like for private companies that are now being used by the public. I think it's generating an amazing boom in creativity and changing a bit of how people work with people or with machines. So that's the stuff that I'm looking forward to the most, like the combination of starting to augment the world through this mixed reality device and start to have AI to, you know, bring a lot more creative views or maybe make some things that are not creative today handled by machines so we can focus on more creative stuff on our own.
Yeah, let's just pick up again on the AI. I'm really interested in your thoughts here. Is it something that you think is going to change your business and actually even the world over the next decade?
Definitely. I think it's a huge transformative thing that's going to have implications in many different industries and things we consider normal to do today that would be completely different even a year from now. On our side, you know, we've been playing with AI and been working with NVIDIA as well on how can we make our avatars, you know, autonomous or to be used, you know, for now we're going to use it later this year as a FAQ, you know, assistant, but a dynamic one. But you can use it as a retail assistant. You can do many, many, many things. But even like, I think just simply from creating like, using Stable Diffusion or how to mix things again that are not supposed to mix together and how you can make something new. I think with art styles and AI, it's opening so many possibilities. And mainly, I think it's going to trigger a lot of profiles that maybe never managed to do things creatively because they didn't have the craftsmanship or the know-how to do some creative-based activities. But now they can really maybe bring to life amazing concepts or creative ideas they have. But with AI, it's facilitating how they can express that visually. So I'm very much looking forward to a whole new generation of people creating amazing, weird, crazy things. And that's where I think it's going to be very important to still have really, really good human curation and really good taste, because there are going to be so many things that we need to curate all of that. And that's why, you know, taste is something to me that I think is a superpower if you have good taste. And I'm French, you know, really believe there is good and bad taste. There's no other taste is in the nature. No, there is good and bad taste, but bad taste is also a business. But that's going to be a very, very important, I think, that humans, you know, still are able to create, how you differentiate what a human creates on his own or with AI, and how you manage to define what is good through all that tsunami of, you know, creation and crazy things are going to happen thanks to AI.
So if that's the case, what do you think are some of the challenges that Artifact will face over the next decade?
I don't think we have many challenges, to be honest with you, because we always made the company so that from day one, we wanted to be, well, you know, technology is integrated in everything we do. We have access to Midjourney, you know, this, you know, visualization AI like very early. We've been implementing it in our workflow since day one. And we always made the company so that we have an open source aspect to it so that people can take what we do and remix them and monetize it if they want. Because again, like, always been a big believer of the hive mind is stronger than just, you know, the board members, in a sense, like the board seats. So we always created the brand so that we're future-proof in the sense that they are parts of the brand that is open to the community. And we manage, again, like, it was something we worked on very hard, and I particularly spent a lot of time early days, is how do we make sure that the base core for our community and fan base is made of people who are creative, do 3D, are internet savvy, and AI savvy. Like, our community has been using AI a lot since the tools are available to the public. So if you have a core group of people who are believing your brand, supporting your brand, and building on top of your brand with their creative skills, I think you are future-proof. So we really made the brand like that since day one. And that's why, honestly, I don't see how all of that is going to be detrimental to us. I think it's just going to be positive.
So you've been very closely as an organization linked to the NFT world, and there's been some challenges of recent times. How do you see Artifact continuing to build and engage here?
No, so I think for us, the challenge and what's important is how we go beyond the NFT world. And we started actually with content on Instagram that got viewed millions of times because we were proposing a vision of the future that was exciting people. And then, you know, we use NFTs as a medium to start to build the business and to materialize the vision we had of selling digital goods first. And it was not possible before without NFTs. You know, the only way you could do that were if you were a game publisher and had a closed ecosystem with gaming items and game economy. So NFTs were always treated as a medium and benefited from that huge hype wave and the technology to push us forward. But for us, I think what's important is to make sure people love us for our designs, our creativity, and of course, the amazing community we have. And how we go beyond Web3 and NFTs is the big challenge for Artifact that we already started to tackle since we were born anyway. So I'm not worried.
Yeah, and I'm not worried either for you. I loved a quote that you had that I read that said, you can manifest one idea from a sci-fi book from the 70s every single day today. Can you expand on that? Tell me how you plan to continue turning fiction into reality.
No, it's true. You know, I grew up playing lots of games and reading a lot of, you know, sci-fi books. And now we're really reaching a moment where all these things are, like, you know, like the Star Trek or AI or all of this stuff you've been reading in the book back in the days or seeing movies that are actually happening right now, right? So some of them with a different form factor, or like maybe not as cool as it was in some movies, but it's getting there, right? It's more for you to understand that, okay, this is the first iteration of the things I used to see in these sci-fi movies. But if you understand the technology and get the right people with you to start to do things with it, and again, that's the most important, is not to keep these things in the lab or in a closed environment, like get them in the market, get the people to interact with it, get people to remix it. It's how you're going to also accelerate that future, because people are very, very, very smart these days. Like the kids are smarter than I think we've ever been. So I think we need to leverage that and embrace it. So you can definitely these days make crazy sci-fi ideas happen in a day, because digitally, you know, everything is a lot faster, right? So it's all a matter of, do you have the right people with you to make it happen? But everything is possible.
And Benoit, what are your goals, both personally and professionally, over the next 10 years?
That's a good question. Again, I like to provoke the future in a sense, you know, make it happen faster. I think there's a lot of things that are very, very successful these days, but are very boring, or they could be a lot more exciting, or get a lot more value to people than just consume it. So I really want to continue to make things that are accelerating the future, and to mainly empower talent that I discover, because I'm really good at spotting people who are great and making them confident and surrounding them by other people who are super good that maybe they would have not crossed the path of, but because I managed to put them and glue them together, something magic happens. So I've been, you know, of course, investing in lots of interesting things. I still, you know, scroll on Twitter and Instagram to discover a new talent every day. I DM them, I try to do things with them, or I buy their art. So I really want to continue to be a bit of a motivating force for young talent and artists, and continue to make people work creative and maybe a bit geek, that, you know, their time is now, and then that maybe they can use me as an inspiration, but hopefully I can even help them to do stuff even better than that. That's my goal.
Oh, I love that goal. And Benoit, I just want to say thank you to you for coming on the show and sharing your insights and your expertise with us. I am so excited to see how you're going to continue to innovate and all the advances that you're going to make with the different technologies, and also the collaborations as well.
No, thank you.
It certainly sounds like your story is just getting started.
Yeah, we don't stop. You know, it's, I think I always say that I'm so happy that I'm born in this day and age and not in the Middle Ages. Imagine if you were like this, you know what I mean? So I think we are lucky, even though the world is very strange, we are lucky to be in this time where technology is around and there's so much access to information and creativity tools. I really love the moment. So I will not stop. And thank you for inviting me. It was super, super interesting discussion.
Thank you. And for you listeners, we'd love you to help us spread the word about Now Then 10 by sharing this episode with a friend or a colleague and rating or reviewing the podcast. We'll be back soon with another exciting guest on Now Then 10. Until next time.